Confronting Financial Norms. That's today's episode. Let's get to it. Hey everyone, I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And this is the Investing in Real Estate show. This is the show where we talk about passive income, we talk about investing, we talk about buy and hold real estate. That's the vehicle that we use to build passive income. We are in our new studio, although we've been having all kinds of network issues, so you have to sit side by side with me.
Yeah, I know. But at least he took a shower. He went swimming.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm clean, nice. Hey, welcome to the show. So today we're on the heels of a big stock market sort of correction problem. Some are saying don't call it a crash because it's nothing like 2007, 2008. But there was quite a pause this week and that sort of Trump bump, I guess, is gone.
I guess. I hadn't heard any of these terms. You're throwing around so many media terms.
You never heard Trump bump?
No, I haven't heard that.
The idea, you know, when he came into office, there like the stock market went up and he would go out and talk at public events all the time about how, look at the stock market, it's because of me that we're doing so good.
Okay.
So the Trump bump, the honeymoon is over. But this, a lot of people saying, look, this was inevitable, right?
Yes.
Interest rates going up, inflation going up.
Right.
What is the Federal Reserve going to do? So this honeymoon is over.
Well, it's so interesting that we blame or credit the administration for kind of market perversions anyway. So this is the impetus for this program today is that, you know, most people think, well, okay, it's not timing the market, it's just time in the market. So I'm just going to ride it out, right? But when you really start to look at like that over a graph, okay, like where do I get in and out and how is that going to affect me? It's really usually very depressing, right?
Right. Well, it's really upsetting, especially if people looked at where their money went during the 2008 collapse. They, you know, a lot of people had money in the stock market. They had money in their 401ks, and people who were nearing retirement age suddenly had it all wiped away.
Yeah.
And then they retired, and they were left with like $5,000, and they had $100, or they had. I know people that lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in their 401k.
And then they just sort of wait for it to come back. So usually, what I hear, word on the street, because I spend a lot of time walking the street here in Florham Park, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Actually,
that's not a good thing to say.
Right.
She's
I walk the streets.
Not in
with
the,
a stroller, usually. I'm digging a little bit deeper here.
The Police wrote a song about Roxanne.
Okay, right.
Mm-hmm.
What was the point that I was trying to make? Oh, that I'm so street that I hear these things all of the time is that some people are like, the stock market's too crazy, I just don't do it. And then other people are like, well, I just wait it out, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a problem with both camps. It's not that you should just not be invested. That's wrong too. So the first belief I wanted to sort of challenge is that you should just save all your money, like put it in a savings account. Why do you think we should confront that belief?
Well, I've done a whole episode called Savers Are Losers because, again, the dollar is a fiat currency. It's government-backed currency. Every government-backed currency in world history has collapsed. So if you have dollars, paper dollars, in a bank account, it's not even paper dollars, it's a number on a bank account website backed by the government dollar, which is not backed by anything. It's not backed by gold or silver. We're not on the gold standard anymore. So you're sitting there and saving in some account, probably some terribly low interest rate account, maybe 1% if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. So you've got this money sitting there doing nothing for you, and it's not producing cash flow. Now, let's say you had $100,000. You purchased two rental properties with that. Now that might be performing $1,600 a month in cash flow for you.
Right. And then you own a tangible asset, right, that you can effect with your effort. So most people don't realize that the money in our economy, only 4% of it exists in paper form. So when you're saving money, you're saving numbers on a hard drive that may or may not be worth anything. And if that money doesn't perform, then you're losing money because inflation is a real thing. So if you sock it away, even in like a IRA that's a market index, right? So it's performing like around the index of the market conservatively between 1% and 4%. then by the time you want to use that money, inflation has made it so it's really only worth about 75% the value anyway. So a lot of times, if you're thinking that my savings account is my performing asset, then you're losing the race because the world is moving faster than your money is. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have savings. Of course you should. And I recently, just this week, went on a quest to find the best savings account that I could with the highest interest rate. And it's not easy to do. So most of us, you know, just kind of take the savings account that's linked to your checking account. So the bank sells it to you like, hey, thanks for opening a checking account. Guess what? You get a free savings account with a 0.04% interest, right? It's nothing to write home about. So these beliefs lead us to loser products. And it's just something that we want you to reevaluate when you look into your accounts. And by the way, I found a pretty good savings rate. I found a 1.5% savings account. And I just did some homework on bankrate.com.
All right. So bankrate.com will have some of those. That's great. But again, I think about real estate investing with a 12% net return, 10% net return, like our new construction that we're bought, you know, that we're doing right now, like about a 9.5-10% net return. And then you compare that to a 1% return, which then you don't even get the tax benefits. You don't get the tax shelter that you create with real estate investing as well.
So no, they tax your interest.
They tax your interest.
Right.
So not only are you making almost nothing with a savings account, you're also then being taxed and you're not building a net asset, a cash flowing net worth asset to add to your portfolio.
Although Clayton and I always have to hide our, you know, sort of savings accounts from anyway, because he always wants to buy real estate from it. So I think most financial advisors will tell you to keep 6 months of living expenses in a savings account. And most of the time I have to hide the passwords from Clayton because he's like, oh, we have that. Let's invest it. I'm like, no, that's our emergency fund.
Yeah, that's healthy. That's certainly a healthy way to look at finances. All right. So that's number one in that list. Now, what's number two on your list?
Okay. Number two is that you should automate your savings contributions, and that's how you build your savings. So it's not that that's not a good idea. It's a fine idea. But if that's the only way that you're building your assets, then again, you're losing the race.
I remember the book, and it was a book that I thought at the time changed my life. And it was actually, it did help me kind of get my head around some of my debt at the time. It was David Bach. David Bach wrote a book called The Automatic Millionaire. And I remember reading it when I lived in Ohio, in Dayton, Ohio, where we actually do some great investing now. But and it was funny, like, you know, you'd set up an ING bank account.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would just save like $25 a week or something. You know, he also told you not to buy Starbucks lattes, the latte factor. It was a lot of this stuff. If you actually ran the numbers, there's no way you could actually have built wealth. I mean, there were some great things. There were some smart little savings things in there. But at the end of the day, this was not a wealth building book, like this sort of idea of just automating some of these things. Yes, it's nice to put a little away. Like we're putting a little away for our kids' school every week. And we're putting it into that savings account that you just talked about.
1.5%. Yeah.
Because I really wanted to hit that. I said, look, we have to pay this amount each year. Let's just kind of front load that and make that happen. But yeah, just sort of the idea of automating your savings and that's all you'll need to do is total garbage.
Right. And also, I was thinking about this in terms of Clayton just reread Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think it's something that he likes to refresh himself on every week. Not every week.
Every week. Nonstop. You're reading that book again?
He can quote it. But he can quote long passages from it. And one of the quotes that... don't show that off. One of the quotes that he sort of brought home the other day as he walked into the kitchen, he's like, you know, this thing really, I just sort of forgot how brilliant this was when he says that the rich buy assets and the poor buy liabilities. So if you are in this mindset that I only just automate some contribution to a savings and then the rest of my money is going towards all of my living expenses, you're losing the race, right? Because that means you've taken a small percentage, as much as you think you can spare, and then the rest of it is going into liabilities that you've agreed upon, like your car payment, your credit card payment, your student debt, and your mortgage, right? So then most of your money is going into your buying of liabilities, and only a tiny sort of automated percent is going into your savings account. You got to flip those, right? If you flip those, you're really building wealth. You're losing the race. You have to think about wealth as like some people are running this race like a marathon and really making progress and realizing how to move the ball forward and pace themselves. And some people, I don't know, whatever. You finish the metaphor. It makes sense in my head.
No, I'm not going to finish that metaphor. But it's a great that switching that paradigm around how you're building wealth. I mean, and we have this safety net idea.
Right.
The idea of the safety net is that you get a job, you have a 401k, you put away some money for savings, save 6 months of your job money. I love that idea too, right? Which is like, save for an emergency 6 months of your job salary.
Okay. No, it's 6 months of your living expenses. And I think that, you know, that's kind of like if you lose your job and you can't find another one, or natural disaster hits and your insurance payment doesn't come, you know, that's not, are you really going to challenge that one?
Well, I'm going to challenge people to think about that, right?
Okay.
What would make better sense? What are your month? I talk about our freedom number. So
right.
What is your monthly expenses? Is it $4,000 a month in expenses? Is it $7,000 a month? What if you could, based on the amount of money that you're putting away for your rainy day fund, started thinking about intelligently investing in real estate? You know, the idea that you need to use all of your own money is total garbage. There's so much money out there, private money and other people's money, that you could be pulling these assets into your portfolio to create wealth.
Right.
So instead of thinking about 6 months for a rainy day fund, why not have $4,000 a month in cash flow coming in so you don't have to worry about losing that job? The safety net of the job is total garbage. So yes, that is the metaphor that I'll kind of continue and wrap it up. Today's episode is brought to you by Fund and Grow. If you want to visit more and learn more about it, go to morrisinvest.com/funding to get 0% interest to buy your next rental property. 0% interest. Now, let me tell you how this works. Now, I think the most common question I get from people, whether I'm doing a live stream, a live show, is how can I get money to buy real estate? Well, I always say there's money everywhere. And that's where Fund and Grow comes into play. We've partnered with them so that you'll save $500 off the sign-up fee. And by the way, you only pay that if they get you the money. Now, how does it work? Well, it's very simple. They actually will set up business credit cards for you. Now, these are not personal credit cards. These are business lines of credit. And most of these cards have a 0% interest. They have now raised over $20 million for Morris Invest clients. They sent me over the spreadsheet of all of the clients who've used Fund and Grow, and the number is over $20 million in funding that they've raised in order for folks to buy real estate. Don't take my word for it. Listen to an investor who just bought his second property through us using Fund and Grow at 0% interest.
Yeah, this is Mike, and thanks to Morris Invest introducing me to Fund and Grow. I was able to raise $40,000 in capital to buy my third rental property, and it wouldn't have been possible if not for Fund and Grow.
There you go. It's super simple to do. In fact, what they'll do is they'll set up an LLC. They take care of all of it. You'll never use the LLC for any other reason other than these business credit cards. They'll get you a series of them. So you might get three or four cards. Each of them might have $20,000, $30,000 in limit. Doesn't, you know, and it might add up to $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. So for me, I was able to get $176,000 at 0% interest. Now, that interest rate will probably last about, you know, a year to 18 months, depending on the cards. So what do? Buy a smart B-class property that you know you can pull some equity out of, or a new construction property. So for instance, picking up a B-class property that you then refinance after it's rehabbed, pull some of that equity back out of it with, you know, a local bank, with a private lender, and then pay off that card, and then rinse and repeat. And the great process in this whole thing is that Fund and Grow works with you to then go back and get you new cards. So they're constantly working with you to get you more, to get you new interest rates, get you new cards so that you can keep buying real estate. It's a really fantastic program. I can't speak highly of them enough. Their customer service is fantastic. And you're going to save $500 just for working through our website, because we've partnered with them in order for you guys to buy some additional rental properties wherever it is across the country. Go to our website, morrisinvest.com/funding, and you'll save $500 off if you sign up through that link. And just type in your information right there, and then you'll jump on the phone and have a quick conversation with them. I can't speak highly enough of them. I really love these guys. Fund and Grow is the company. Go to our website, morrisinvest.com/funding, to see if it's a fit for you. All right, so number three on your list, never touch your 401k.
Yes. And so this is one of the things that we really get people write us hateful tweets about. Do you get that? People on my, if I say you might want to borrow from your 401k, people act like I've said your kid should smoke pot for lunch or something. Like, they find it so threatening. And I think that's a large part because the marketing has really worked on us and told us that the 401k is your, like,
it's the saving grace.
Sacred chalice that you, you know, like right. If you touch it, then the walls are going to cave in, like Indiana Jones kind of thing. Like right. People really fall for that. And once you are fluent in financial product evaluation, meaning you can look at the things you own, like your IRA and your 401k and your savings accounts, you won't be all that impressed with your 401k. Tell the story of when you tried to cash out your 401k last
year. They wouldn't let me. So now there's a difference between borrowing.
No. I mean, when you left Fox and you said, I want to take this 401k and put it in a self-directed IRA. And they said to you, oh, really? Tell that story.
Yeah. And the guy told me, he's like, well, you know, we perform it like with our own accounts, perform at about a 2% or was it like 2 or 3% return?
He said,
return? Oh,
but you can keep it here because it was hosted by Fidelity and it was in Fidelity mutual funds. And he said, well, you can keep these assets and roll it into an IRA since it's no longer an employer-sponsored account. Now you can just have it as an IRA. So it's your own account and we can keep it in the same funds it's already in because it's performing at 2%.
Yeah,
and
like
he fully expected you to high five him over 2%.
2%. I'm like, hey, buddy, do you know what I do for a living? I buy real estate with a net return between 9 and 12%. That's net. Now my gross is like 18, 19, 20%, you know? So he's like, oh, I didn't realize you did that. He goes, yeah, we can't touch that.
We can't compete with that. Go ahead. Go do what you're going to do,
right,
buddy.
Well, so this paradigm, this idea of your 401k, I mean, you borrow from it, right? Borrow as a loan to yourself. That you're not getting a withdrawal penalty. I think that's where the ignorance comes in around the 401k. People,
right,
when they hear, oh, take money out of
this
your 401k.
This is a different tactic we've talked about.
They think of it as... That I'm going to get a withdrawal penalty of like 25% or some sort of fee.
And be taxed on it. Right. It's a totally legal loan. You give a loan to yourself. You do whatever you want with it. In fact, we took some of it and paid off some unfavorable debt. We had credit card debt about $20,000 in credit card debt at a 17% interest rate. That sucks, right?
That's a liability.
So if we then take money out of a 401k and we've set a 4% interest rate, well, now we're not paying 17% to the credit cards. We're paying only 4% on that debt. But to us, now we're the banker. So we make that interest back, not the credit cards.
All right, number four on the list.
Number four, mutual funds are the safest way to save. And I get this a lot on my Twitter stream.
I heard this growing up.
Dave Ramsey says.
Yeah, was it Vanguard? It was like a Vanguard fund. It's a good mutual fund. It's really safe. It's a good investment. Mutual funds, Dave Ramsey says to do it.
Right. And mutual funds are just a collection of stock, right? It's sort of stock for dummies. Because
with high fees.
Right. They think that if you don't know how to cherry pick stocks, which also is exceedingly hard, then we'll just do it for you and we'll put together sort of a mix of stocks, but that's still keeping you in what's basically an index of the market. Now, they can be heavily favored towards one thing or another. Some mutual funds are agriculture, some are foreign startups, some are domestic startups, right? And they're just sort of more heavily mixed into those things, but most of them do have kind of like, it's like a mirepoix, like a you know what that is? A mirepoix is like what you start your soup with is like carrots, onions, and celery. Like there's sort of this baseline of what is in every soup. Like there's sort of a baseline of what's in every mutual fund. It's like McDonald's and AT&T, right?
Like, GE. Yeah, exactly.
But then they sort of pepper in like different types of things. So you think, oh, I'm really heavily invested in foreign commodities or whatever, which is true. I mean, so many of them are really expensive. You're taxed on the earnings every year. You think like, oh, I just own this, right? But you actually pay taxes on the capital gains inside of your mutual funds. And it's just, to me, it's something that you cannot affect. So it's a very passive way to It is a performing asset, but in the way that we evaluate them in our family, they're kind of duds.
All right, number five on the list is taxes. You brought up taxes. So another sort of myth or a way to rethink your investing or finances is that taxes are a fixed thing. That's something you can't ever change.
Right.
And that's total garbage because real estate investors, if you're smart, don't pay taxes. As Robert Kiyosaki talks about all the time, I'm a real estate investor. I don't pay taxes. As Tom Wheelwright reminds us, if you're a smart real estate investor, you should be paying zero in taxes. And there are reasons for that. You purchase hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of real estate, you now have a huge tax benefit from owning that huge tax shelter to offset your other income. There's all sorts of creative ways to play with the tax code that benefit real estate investors. And now additionally, an additional 20% deduction under the new tax law.
And I was always sort of the opinion, well, as your salary gets bigger, taxes are just no big deal because there's enough money. And that's actually exactly opposite thinking, right? Because, and now as we look at the new GOP tax law, we notice that doctors and lawyers who are W-2 employees, they may have a salary that matches ours as investors, but because of the way their estate is set up, because they take a paycheck, they get taxed so much heavier than we do because we have a small business inside of our family, because we are investors and entrepreneurs. So anyone who sets up their estate in such a way that's favorable to their taxes is making a ton more money, even if our sort of gross number is the same, right? Because as Robert Kiyosaki points out, taxes are an investor's biggest expense. And it's one of the things they teach you in graduate school and in business school. Number one lesson is how to minimize your taxation. So it's not something that you're just like, well, this is the bill and I pay it. If you're in that mindset, again, you're losing the race.
Right. And the tax code is written to benefit investors who own a business, business owners who invest, and specifically business owners who invest in real estate. That's the number one way to build wealth in this country because the tax code makes it so. It's not just me sitting here at Morris Invest saying, that's the number one way to build wealth is real estate.
It is a little bit that.
It is, but it's on the
that
backs
just happened.
Of it's on the backs of facts. Facts. So like, you know, owning raw land, that's great. But guess what? How about a cash flowing asset sitting on that raw land, a bank that's producing monthly cash flow that you get to write off on your taxes with an additional 20% now in this GOP tax law? So this idea that taxes are the sort of fixed thing, there's only two things. What is it? Two things in life? What, death
and taxes. There are two certainties.
If you're a real estate investor, the only certain thing is death. So taxes, you can learn how to understand and manipulate it legally to benefit you. It's written that way on purpose. That's why most members of Congress own real estate. So there you go. Those are the five things. Any final thoughts?
Those are five things we would like you to challenge. But I'm sure when you look at your own balance sheet, there's plenty of things that you see there that you can think, well, I think this is untouchable, but let me challenge that and let me look at it for its merits. So hopefully this inspires you to do just that.
So thank you so much for subscribing and becoming a family member here with our Investing in Real Estate show. We love all of the feedback. We love all the great comments that you leave and the comments thread and the 5-star reviews. Thank you so much. We're doing a lot of live streams from the new studio here. We're so excited about it and still working out some of the kinks with the network. That's why she has to sit next to me today. But, you know, she has to do that once in a while. So we'll see you next time on the Investing in Real Estate show. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. We'll see you, everyone.